And welcome back to Focus on Illinois Public Media. I'm Scott Cameron. All this month, we've looked at a number of the challenges surrounding getting mental health care in central Illinois. We wrap up that series later today. As part of the series, a few weeks ago, we hosted a Twitter chat on the topic. Many of you shared experiences, and a number of questions came up, too. One of the issues that arose in that Twitter chat was the language that we use to describe mental illness. Dan Jay tweeted at us, said that a friend's therapist complains whenever she calls herself crazy as a term. Lisa tweeted, "I never know exactly the right correct terminology when talking about mental illness." She says, "I don't want to offend." So that's where we'll spend the remaining time of the show today. Joey Ramp knows how powerful language can be when it comes to mental illness. She joins us now by phone. Joey, welcome to the show. Thanks for talking to us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, good morning. Now, you have PTSD. You talk about this. You're fairly open about it. What happens when you share that information with people who don't already know you?
Well, that's not the first thing I say when I meet someone, but I do have a service dog, and my disability is relatively invisible, so people are curious. And at times they will ask, whether I'm in a college setting or out socially. And usually, when I first say that I have PTSD, their first response is they assume that I've been in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And they generally want to thank me for my service and such, but I've never served in the military. My PTSD is not due to a military-related trauma.
But they make that assumption.
Yes, they automatically make that assumption. And, generally, then they're even more curious, and at times they will ask, well, if you weren't in the military, I don't understand why you have PTSD. I thought that was just military related. And then I've made a choice. I've gotten to a point in my recovery where I am trying to educate people. So I am forthcoming when I speak, and I tell them, no, my PTSD is related to childhood sexual trauma and domestic abuse. And that's when the conversation generally gets very awkward.
And it's almost making that assumption almost seems to, in a way, try to devalue your own experience. Do you take it that way?
Can you repeat that, please?
Sure. Just as making an assumption and sort of that confusion that comes up after they hear, okay, you have PTSD, you must have served in the military. Mm-hmm. You say, well, no, my experience was different. And then there's this kind of this awkward moment you just described of confusion and not understanding that, and that doesn't make sense to them. It almost strikes me as, in a way, devaluing your experience is the message that's being sent there. Do you sense that?
Yes, absolutely. That is something. People don't understand that. PTSD can come from any type of trauma, whether it's sexual abuse, domestic abuse, being in a car accident, witnessing a violent crime. The statistics. As PTSD occurrences, abuse children is 50%, and military veterans are 30%. There's a lot of overlapping there with domestic abuse and raped adults and firefighters and policemen and things like that. But PTSD is not just military. It's got a wide spectrum of traumas, and I don't think that many people understand that. For someone who has experienced a severe trauma in their life, the brain internalizes that, and it alters the brain chemicals, and that's how PTSD develops over time. Unfortunately, people with long-term traumas like combat or domestic abuse, or someone who's experienced extended rape or kidnapping or something, then that becomes a process in their brain that just keeps repeating and repeating, and it actually alters the brain chemicals. I would like people to know that, there are so many people out there who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder, and they need to be able to talk about it. They need to be able to feel like they are supported, and, someone who's experienced rape, someone who's experienced domestic abuse or, a natural disaster, someone who experiences military trauma, you know, all of those traumas can be debilitating, and they can alter someone's life. And, you know, the symptoms are the same, but all of our nightmares are maybe different, and our experiences are different, and our triggers are different. But ultimately, the symptoms can be just as debilitating for someone from another form of trauma as someone with a military-related trauma.
Right. And you actually just kind of answered my last question here. I was going to, you know, so what do you wish people would know from that experience? But, Joey Ramp, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think we often find that, you know, in doing this series on mental health here over the last month, people often will tell us that by sharing the story, they, you know, are able to sort of reach other people and help other people, and that often makes a big difference. So, Joey Ramp, thank you very much for your time today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Kate White joins us now. She's Associate Professor of Behavioral Science at Millikan University. Kate, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
First of all, and is that a common experience to have people jump to conclusions when they find out somebody has, in this case, PTSD, but really any mental illness?
Yes, I believe it is. I think likely that the jump now to a person with a service dog having PTSD and being part of the military is due to the increased awareness of our servicemen coming home with PTSD and some of the treatments that are being offered to them. So the communication or the media has been very specific about problems that our military men are experiencing and what some of the treatments are. I don't think we as a society have been as educated on other forms of mental health issues or other PTSDs as well as we have our military most recently. So I think sometimes the layperson can jump and think, okay, now I heard that on the radio, I heard that on the TV, and then they think, oh, well, PTSD, military. I think probably their reaction is trying to be supportive, but they are then taken back because they're in unfamiliar territory, and possibly, as Joey said, we're unaware of PTSD coming from other sources.
Yeah, I think you hit something important there, that people, you know, that awkwardness that we're talking about that launched this conversation, some of the things we heard on Twitter, you know, it comes from a place of people wanting to help, wanting to know what to say, and just not knowing that.
Right. You know, and as I thought about this more, I feel that's pretty symbolic of our society's non-knowledge about mental health issues. If you had a neighbor whose son had an acute appendicitis attack and was raced to the hospital one evening, you might go next door to your neighbor and say, oh, my goodness, I see your son was taken to the hospital. How are things going? If I can let out your dog, if I can do something, just call me. I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Because we as a society have been socialized to know what to do with, quote-unquote, medical illnesses. But we haven't been socialized on how to respond appropriately to mental health issues. And because we separate mental health issues from, quote-unquote, medical issues, we make it awkward on ourselves.
Yeah. And, I mean, it is hard. I, you know, I even think when I was talking to Joey, you know, is there a moment do I say, well, I'm sorry that happened? Do I say, you know, I didn't know what to say?
Absolutely. And it's because we learn our social skills from our families and our parents and those in the community around us. And mental health awareness really hasn't been, we don't have a long history of mental health awareness in our society. It really started in the 60s. It happened before then, but it wasn't common talk until the 60s or the 70s.
What changed there?
Well, policy-wise, in the United States, President Kennedy, and then with his life shortened, President Johnson, started the conversations on community health treatment, mental health treatment, and the deinstitutionalization of people that had mental health and some other types of behavioral or developmental problems. They brought that topic out of the closet. Prior to the 60s, many times someone that had a mental health problem or even a developmental disability was institutionalized. They were not seen as people to be part of traditional society.
So not only were these issues not talked about, the people who were affected by those issues were hidden.
Yes, they were hidden away in large institutions. And that started to be torn down with Kennedy. He had personal issues in his own family of mental health, depression, suicide attempts, alcohol and drug issues in his family. And I think he had an aunt that had Down syndrome. And so he started the conversation of bringing these issues out and made it okay to talk about. And then after his death, Lyndon Johnson and his Great Society Plan and the development of the Community Mental Health Center movement followed through with that. So it started the conversation, but we have a lot of years of misunderstanding of mental health issues. And our knowledge, we know so much more medically about appendicitis or gastroenteritis than we do mental health diagnoses and causes. Mm-hmm. We're still learning about the brain.
So there's still a long way to go, both in terms of perceptions and the knowledge, it sounds like, of what yeah. we know and understand.
And we were told socially, you know, don't look, don't ask, don't talk.
Mm-hmm. And that's
because that's rude. That's rude.
Right. And that's a hard habit to break.
It is. But these are people, and they have an issue, an illness, something that they're working on. And we care about them. And so you say, I really don't understand much about that, but I'm sure glad your dog helps you.
So don't be afraid to say, look, I don't know what to do here. I don't know the perfect thing to say.
Exactly.
But I want you to know I care.
Yes. I think that is something that is helpful in so many situations when you don't know what to say.
Yeah. Now, coming back to what launched this conversation was a couple of comments on Twitter, one involving the word crazy. In this case, he described somebody who was seeing a therapist and often called herself crazy, and the therapist said, you know, don't do that.
Right.
That's a loaded term.
It's a very loaded term with many, many negative connotations for that person, and that's kind of a label our society when people do not act as we want them to act. Sometimes we label them. They're crazy. They're hyper. They're out of it. They're bonkers. And so people start to feel different, isolated, alone, and very negative about themselves. It's very negative self-talk and self-projection. It's not helpful to anyone.
Yeah. And we've got about a minute left here, but just looking at some of the other terms that come up, you know, in the series that we're doing, you talked about media coverage earlier. You know, we often see in headlines and in news stories and things like that, we try to be very aware of it, the word suffer related to mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
How does that strike you?
The word suffer?
The word suffer is in terms of mental illness. It's been described as implying that there is suffering when some people will say, you know what, no, I've learned to live and thrive with this. I am not suffering from this. This does not own me.
Many forms of mental illness can be a lifetime management issue, such as diabetes. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's just draw a parallel there. Someone that has diabetes is always going to have to manage their diet and their exercise and their weight. And sometimes they'll have, even in their best attempts, they're going to have a setback with their blood sugar and they're going to need some attention and some work. And you might say at that time, they're suffering the side effects of their illness. That doesn't diminish them. That doesn't make them a lesser person. But do they suffer from having chronic diabetes? It depends on your definition of suffering. Again, suffering is kind of a loaded word.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that at times people managing their mental health issues do have periods where they are uncomfortable, unhappy, feel bad. And if you would like to label that suffering, I think that's appropriate.
Yeah, it's one thing that... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But you don't suffer every day, 24 hours a day. As if you're in your last stages of terminal cancer.
Right. And that's one thing I guess I'm learning here from this conversation as well, is the series that we've done, is in many ways, you know, not labeling other people, allow them to determine their own words that describe their experience rather than trying to plaster them with your own perceptions.
Absolutely. And just, I mean, they're people. Talk with them.
Right, you know? Exactly. Just like a broken leg, if somebody fell down, you'd say, hey, you doing okay? A similar kind of thing.
Yeah, what happened to your leg? You know, if we see someone with a prosthesis on the street, we do not assume they were military.
Right.
Okay.
Well, Kay White, we're going to have to leave it there. We're just short on time here.
Kay
White
fine.
Is Associate Professor in the Behavioral Sciences Department at Millikan University. Joined us today on the phone. Thank you very much. It was nice to talk to you.
You're welcome, and thank you.
All right. Jason Croft is Focus's Technical Director. Ryan Weber is our intern. And for one final day, Lindsay Moon is Focus's producer, one of the smartest, most creative producers I've ever worked with. She's the one who makes this show succeed day in and day out. And after today, she'll be heading back home to Iowa Public Radio, at least for now. Lindsay, thank you for guiding Focus these past 2 years, for bringing an energy and a new perspective to our newsroom, for making me a better host. I was lucky to have you back. Good luck. We're going to miss you. I'm Scott Cameron. This is Focus on Illinois Public Media.